Welcome to Repros Fight Back, a podcast on all things repro. I'm your host, Jenny Wetter, and each episode I will be taking you to the front lines of the escalating fight over our sexual and reproductive health and rights at home and abroad. Each episode I will be speaking with leaders who are fighting to protect our reproductive health and rights to ensure that no one's reproductive health depends on where they live. It's time for Repros to fight back. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Repros Fight Back. Across campuses around the country, students are going back to classes, football season has kicked off, go Badgers, and students are seeking healthcare services. Unfortunately, not all students seeking to access healthcare, particularly reproductive healthcare, are going to find the healthcare they need. Joining me today are the co-founders for the Student Coalition for Reproductive Justice, Lauren Morrissey and Christina Frasick. Hi, Lauren and Christina. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
So since I have two guests, let's make sure that everybody knows who's talking when. So I'll let you do a brief introduction of yourselves. Christina, do you want to go first?
Sure. So my name is Christina Frasick. I am one of the co-founders and co-executive directors of the Student Coalition for Reproductive Justice, which we lovingly call SCURJ. And I am a second-year medical student as well.
Oh, wonderful. Lauren?
Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren Morrissey, also a co-founder and co-executive director of SCURJ. I am a senior at Loyola University Chicago, and I'm double majoring in political science and religious studies.
First of all, I kind of love SCURJ. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's funny because the reason we kind of call it that is because we're kind of treated like a literal scourge on campus.
Yeah, no, it made total sense to me when you were like SCURJ. I was like, yeah, no, that sounds exactly right. So let's start at the beginning. Do you want to take a couple of minutes and let people know what SCURJ is?
Yeah, absolutely. So SCURJ is a student-powered organization that is fighting for reproductive justice at Catholic colleges and universities. SCURJ is a coalition of five autonomous groups, and counting though, at different universities across the nation that are basically providing sexual and reproductive health care to students. This health care is not otherwise available to them on campus because of our university's Catholic identity.
Yeah, and as of now, we have chapters at Notre Dame, Georgetown, Santa Clara, DePaul, and Loyola, but we have quite a few different schools who have expressed interest in kind of starting chapters and getting this work started on their campus. Right now, we're working on Creighton University and Loyola University, New Orleans.
Great. Would you want to tell a little bit about, we like to tell origin stories here, so a little bit about the origin story of SCURJ.
Yeah, the origin of it has to go all the way back to when I was a junior in undergrad, which was now like 4 years ago. But basically, what kind of happened as I was coming into kind of reproductive justice organizing and the notion of kind of getting into like social justice movements and like activism, I was a junior and very new to the area of accessing healthcare on my own, and my university wouldn't prescribe me birth control. And so what ended up happening kind of as a result was I was in a situation where a condom broke and I really needed to access emergency contraception. And my university also wouldn't provide that, which I went to Loyola University Chicago with Lauren. And as a result, there was kind of a chain of events where via Title X funding and a Planned Parenthood that happened to be relatively close by, I was able to access the emergency contraception that would be most effective for my weight class as like a plus size woman. But in the interim, before that funding came through and we were really able to work it out, I was put in the position of potentially having all of the money I had saved up to apply to medical school kind of put on the line because it was going to end up being an $800-plus fee. And so this kind of all happened right as I was kind of coming into the notion of like, why don't we try to change our university? And so that's where Students for Reproductive Justice at Loyola University Chicago started, and that's how Lauren and I met.
Yeah, so basically more than a year later, Christina and the founding organizers of SRJ were training the next generation of organizers, which is me and my co-organizers that are currently running SRJ Loyola. And it was through this process of me getting ready to like take over SRJ that we kind of hit a stopping point with our administration. We didn't feel like there was any progress happening. And we were like, you know, what are our options? And we came up with two things. We were like, why don't we sue the university? Or like, is there a way for us to combine all these student movements that are happening on these different campuses? Because we were all like generally aware of each other, but we had never really tried to work across campaigns. You know, we like would give each other advice and sometimes like support each other and shout each other out on social media, but we had never really gotten together. And really being the law nerd that I am, I pushed for us to pursue the lawsuit initially. We got to work with the National Women's Law Center and the ACLU of Illinois, but unfortunately, it ended up just being like, the attorneys there were like, you're right, but the case would not survive in the current court system, like as divisive and honestly political that it's becoming. So we pivoted to working across campaigns with other student groups.
Yeah, and like what SCRJ's goal really is now is to unite these student groups in kind of a more cohesive and stable movement to try to kind of address the cyclic nature that you a lot of times see with various like social justice movements on college campuses, because as is the nature of kind of the college system, most students graduate in around 4 years. So you're constantly getting a stream of new students in and students leaving. And so one of the big goals of SCRJ is to really provide a foundation that our kind of different student groups can rely on to kind of unite the movement and help them kind of keep pushing forward.
Yeah, and I also will say like, the common denominator across these student groups is that we actually provide healthcare to students. We provide condoms, dental dams, lube. Hoyas for Choice at Georgetown actually provides emergency contraception to their students. But we also all have different interests, you know, in our own university communities. Like, for example, Loyola is working on a menstrual equity program at our school. Hoyas has a really good relationship with the sex worker community in D.C., and then Notre Dame actually is suing their university for not providing birth control. So we all have our own different things, but the common denominator is that we provide healthcare. And SCRJ being a structural foundation for us to come to has been super, super important because we rely on a variety of community partners to get those products and to get those physical resources. And also there's like this institutional knowledge that's available with that structural foundation. And that was kind of the issue that we all identified as a movement. We were like, we don't, you know, people graduate, like, who are we going to come to make sure that this movement doesn't die after 4 years? So,
you know, we did a recent episode talking about Catholic hospitals and the care that people don't know that they might not be getting at Catholic hospitals. And I think the same is true for students at Catholic universities. You know, you go to the school because you want to go to the school and it's important to you. And then you get there and realize, wait a minute, I don't have access to the same type of services I would have if I went to a different school. So you've touched on a little bit of what some of those services are, but let's take a minute and talk a little bit about what that means. What are problems people are having accessing care at Catholic universities?
Yeah, so kind of from the long list of services that these Catholic schools aren't providing, it includes everything from like they don't provide condoms, contraception, safer sex supplies like dental dams or PrEP, emergency contraception. And at a lot of these schools, it's really even hard to kind of get a referral out to a community health center or even like a physician in the community that like would provide you these products. So that's really what's not available.
Can we pause just 1 second? Because while I think a lot of our listeners probably know what PrEP is, we haven't done like an episode doing like a deep dive into it. So maybe just like a quick 2 second, like what is PrEP?
Yeah, I can take that. So PrEP is a pre-exposure prophylaxis. It is an HIV medication You take it if you are at risk of contracting HIV, if you engage in sexual activity that would put you at risk of HIV. And it's a regimen, and you take it daily to basically lower the likelihood that you would contract HIV. There's also a medication called PEP, which is post-exposure prophylaxis, and that's taken 72 hours after you have come into contact with someone at risk of and put yourself at risk of contracting HIV. So there's the pre-treatment, which is like a safer sex supply, as we call it. And then there's the post, which is a more treatment-based thing.
Sorry for interrupting you, Christina. I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page.
But yeah, just kind of in line with what is and is not provided. What most of these schools are really limiting kind of the scope of care to is really free pregnancy tests and STI tests. And one of the things we really want to note with STI testing, as this is something that I think Scourge is going to kind of focus on in the upcoming months, is that a lot of these testing and like the various tests that you can get at these facilities, they come with really high fees. And that often presents a barrier to a lot of students that will end up basically discouraging them from getting tested, because when tests are upwards of $40 a piece, at the end of the day, you're kind of making a decision of like, okay, do I potentially get tested or risk it and I'm able to buy groceries for the week? And so that's obviously a predicament that we've kind of seen and experienced in various capacities on our campuses, and that we really kind of want to start addressing.
Yeah, no, $40 is a lot for a student.
Yeah, and especially when, like, you're potentially getting multiple tests or kind of like a broad spectrum panel, that can really add up, and it can add up really quickly if you're getting potentially, like, just the standards of, like, HIV, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. Like, fees really do vary school to school, but, like, $40 and more is, it's a lot for a lot of us, and, like, especially most of those who are, like, working with SRJ and a lot of these communities, they're people who have experienced, like, the money factor is kind of really important.
Yeah, and one of the more insidious things, I think, about our campus health centers is that we mentioned it's really hard to get reliable referrals to community clinics, Planned Parenthood, that would actually provide the services that we, you know, need and deserve. And one of the more frequent places that our campus health centers refer out to are crisis pregnancy centers. And for the listeners, if they don't know, crisis pregnancy centers are fake clinics. There are no licensed medical professionals on the premises, and they are basically there to use a variety of manipulation and scare tactics to scare people who are pregnant into carrying out their pregnancy. For example, at Loyola, they refer out to a chain of crisis pregnancy centers called Aid for Women, and this is a very common phenomenon that's happening across all of our campuses. So we're also organizing against that as well.
Yeah, crisis pregnancy centers are high up on my list for an episode that we need to do soon. We did one like a little bit talking about the case that was in front of the Supreme Court last year, but we didn't do like a deep dive into crisis pregnancy centers and all of their shenanigans, which we will have to do soon.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then I think I'll talk about oral birth control specifically, because that's one of the more grayer areas of access on our campus health centers. And so there are some ways you can get a birth control prescription at our campus, but it is extremely difficult. So let's say you're a student and you want birth control and you go to your student health center. So basically you would tell the provider, you could have two routes. You would tell the provider that you have unmanageable acne or horrible period cramps. Alternatively, you could also say that you want birth control as your chosen contraceptive method. And basically, for acne and cramps, you will almost always get a prescription. But if you want to use birth control to have sex, you will absolutely 100% be turned away. And that's frustrating because a lot of our students either really don't know the Catholic Church's position and might go in there and then ask for it anyway, or, you know, think that, like, it's a healthcare provider. Like, you know, I should be able to get medication for whatever it is, the reason that I want. So some of our campuses will give birth control if it's medically necessary, which is a lot of the situation at Catholic hospitals as well. But it comes down to the provider's, like, individual religious beliefs.
Yeah, and like the students knowing that they need to have this medical reason when they go in instead of saying why they, you know, why they want it. Either way, it's healthcare that you should be able to get.
Yeah, and what it's really doing kind of on these campuses is it's setting a really kind of scary precedent that I see more so as like a future healthcare provider, which is just that they're setting up basically a system where you're encouraged to lie to your provider and to say like, okay, I'm maybe trying to get this like oral contraception because I want to be sexually active, but I'm going to tell you that it's because I have really bad cramps. That then goes into your medical record and it's kind of noted, and it sets up a system where you're not kind of maintaining the really kind of trustworthy and open and honest relationship that we kind of as like healthcare providers really want to have with patients. And so that's kind of a really scary precedent and something that like the universities just aren't acknowledging, which the students really do know that this is kind of a workaround that they can use when they need to. And what that's kind of doing to the student clinic.
Yeah, that's a real barrier to accessing healthcare. I mean, you should be able to have an open and honest conversation with your provider. And it's important that you're having an open and honest conversation with your provider. And it's just one of those things that really upsets me that students feel that they have to, you know, have these, you know, stories or whatever to be able to access basic healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So next, we can talk a little bit about, so I think some people kind of know, but like a little bit about why these universities aren't providing these services.
Yeah, the situation basically varies from school to school and sometimes from even a person to an individual provider. It mostly focuses on student health insurance, and Christina has the best background in this.
Yeah, so like from university to university, there's kind of a variety of different mandates as far as health insurance and like what coverage people may be required to carry. So while DePaul doesn't even have health insurance that they really offer to their students, we then also have schools like Loyola and I believe Georgetown where it's required that every student has some form of health insurance. And so one of the things that we really, where a lot of schools start, is looking into what are their student health insurance policies and what are they covering. And what Lauren and I uncovered in a lot of our legal research from a couple summers ago was that under the Affordable Care Act, all of these schools have to provide coverage for basically standard birth control via a third party. And it's part of the Affordable Care Act third party mandate where they may not technically approve of these services, but they still have to cover them via a third party. But what then becomes really tricky is that if you're a student who has to take on the university health insurance because that's potentially the only insurance available to you, whether it's because your parents don't have health insurance or they won't cover you or you potentially don't have that type of a relationship, you're then kind of limited in where you can access care because it's really dependent on who's accepting a university's health insurance system and working around with like the third party covering only specific things. So it becomes a really tricky situation that students often have a really hard time navigating.
Yeah, and might I say that the Affordable Care Act third party mandate is the only legal standard that these university health centers have to follow regarding sexual and reproductive health care. Usually these universities don't take Title X funding. So the Affordable Care Act is the only thing that is, you know, getting them to provide this care. And that's where church teaching really comes in. And going off of your episode on Catholic hospitals, the Catholic Church's teaching obviously informs the care and conduct at all Catholic healthcare facilities, and that includes our campus health centers. They follow these set of directives called the Ethical and Religious Healthcare Directives. It's approved by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is essentially like the political arm of the church. And that drastically impacts the kind of care that we receive in a university setting because it draws on those like I identify like three main teachings about sex that come out of the church. It's, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. Marriage and therefore sex is for procreation. And there is no sex outside of marriage. And so that those three teachings really inform the kind of healthcare that we get. So like, you know, if you're engaging in gay sex, like PrEP and PEP is not available to you because that would encourage gay sex, right? Contraception is not available to you because that prevents procreation. So that's essentially what those ethical and religious healthcare directives do. And the providers in our campus health center are hired under the requirement that they follow those. So it's a matter of going into our campus health centers and maybe possibly finding a provider that might be willing to prescribe it to you for those reasons. And that is rare and far few and far between. So, yeah.
I completely understand. I came up with sex ed at a Catholic school, so I know it was very much of the mean girls variety. You have sex, you're going to get this horrible disease and you're going to die. So I can only imagine that being then exported to a health center and that's the care you're then given.
Yeah, absolutely. And another role that our student groups really play on campus is that they are the sole sex positive educators that are giving medically accurate information to students about their sex and reproductive lives. So that's another role we play in like educating the campus community, because it's often that, you know, our students are coming from Catholic high schools a lot of the time. Like the continuity within Catholic education happens a lot. I went to a Catholic high school and now I go to a Catholic university. And so like, I mean, even then, our sex ed in this country is horrible.
Right. It almost doesn't matter because... Right. You know, so many states don't mandate any sex ed.
Sure.
So many places you're just going to get abstinence only anyway. So it's so important that you can get access to the information you need to make healthy decisions.
Sometimes it's not even about access to sex ed as much as it's about, like, how comprehensive was that sex ed? Because so much of, like, queer sex and different kind of situations that people find themselves in just aren't covered. So, like, even if you go to a school that really does a good job of, like, heteronormative kind of sexual education, a lot of times you'll get the entire kind of other side of the story, like, left out.
Yeah, absolutely. And let alone talking about consent.
Right.
Exactly.
So do you guys want to talk a little bit? I know you said you had five chapters right now. A little bit about what some of those chapters are working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, Notre Dame, one of our chapters, they're called Irish Reproductive Health. They basically started because Notre Dame is actually not following the Affordable Care Act. They do not provide birth control through a third party on their student and employee health insurance. And that really impacted a lot of students. And so they got in touch with the National Women's Law Center and are actually currently suing Notre Dame for not providing birth control under the Affordable Care Act. So that's like very exciting. Like I said, all of our campuses have really, really different interests. Like I said, Loyola Chicago is doing a menstrual equity program, which is super exciting. We put sustainable menstrual products in men's, women's, and gender-neutral bathrooms, which is really exciting. And we're also organizing for our facilities department and university to take that project on as a whole, which is super fun. Hoyas for Choice, like I said, has a really awesome relationship with the sex worker community in DC. And like, obviously that's a huge part of reproductive justice is like upholding that sex work is real work. And they have a really good relationship with the community organizations there. And also are trying to make Georgetown a better place for folks that engage in sex work. So that's some of the just kind of like little tangible projects that we also have on the side from providing healthcare and also pushing our universities to provide that healthcare. But I think one thing I really want to highlight, though, is that the common denominator across all of us as organizers is that we're often really misunderstood. And a lot of students that don't really necessarily have a solid position on our work or come from that Catholic background or a lot of what we hear from folks in the community is like, if you don't like it, why don't you just leave? Like, why don't you transfer? And they really see, some people really see our work as like trying to tear the university down or trying to destroy the Catholic Church, which is not true. Like, a lot of our organizers do what they do because they love their campus community. Like, I really want to make Loyola a better place. I want to be able to make Georgetown a better place, and Notre Dame a better place. At the end of the day, healthcare is a human right. No institution should be able to get in the way of that. And I think it's coming for that care of community. At Catholic schools, we talk about care of community. We are coming from that care of community standpoint, and it's getting administrators to really believe that. Like, we care about ourselves, we care about our community, and we care about the future of the community. So that's a lot of what we do, and that's what drives our work.
So what is Scourge going to be working on?
Yeah, so right now Scourge really has kind of two central goals that we are focusing on. The first is to really establish the foundations of our organization, and what that's going to look like for us is applying for recognized status as a nonprofit. We're only about $200 away from hitting our fundraising goal, which will allow us to file kind of all of the necessary paperwork at the state and national levels to kind of get that recognition. And this will allow us to seek sustainable funding, which will help us build up our organization and the number of people and voices from varying perspectives that are working with Scourge and contributing kind of to this work. It'll also really enable us to start providing a lot of the resources like condoms, emergency contraception, and more to our chapters. Because right now, as Lauren kind of touched on earlier, it's sometimes really a scramble for our chapters to find where they're going to get the resources they need to provide their services that they do, because there's just not really like one way to do it. And in a lot of like Lauren's and my experience, we never really had money as an organization to use on anything. Most of it was out of our own pockets or donations that we were able to kind of scrounge up and find from like the community. Our second goal is to really start focusing on building up a campaign with the student groups we're working with. And so with our chapters, we're establishing point people who will kind of be the interface between Scourge and their campus chapter. And what they're going to really do is stand out and bring the student voice to the campaign we're hoping to build, where we can start chipping away kind of at these universities and their standing refusals to not really provide some of this care. So I mentioned earlier, we're hoping to focus on STI testing as our first kind of organizing mission and as our first campaign, but we're going to kind of work with the student organizers on these campuses to make it effective for them and help them to build power in the movement and like move these universities forward themselves.
Yeah, and I think a lot of our national campaign strategy actually comes from our administrators. In my organizing experience, whenever I met with folks at our campus health center, they were like, okay, you want us to provide condoms? Can you show me another Catholic school that does this? Can you point to, you know, University of San Francisco? Can you point to whatever it is to show us precedent that this is being done at other schools? So our national campaign strategy kind of comes from that. Like, we want to be able to push one school and then be like, hey, you know, Georgetown is doing this, or hey, DePaul is doing this. And then that will encourage our administrators to step up. It's really founded in that collective pressure and collective power of us working together. So really the goal, I think our ultimate goal, if I were to point to it, our ultimate goal of Scourge is for our chapters and our student groups not to operate in the capacity that they do now. It's for our universities to fully take on the responsibility of providing this care. We really just want them to provide the care full stop. So that is our ultimate goal as a coalition.
Great. And now that we know what is happening on these campuses, I always like to end on a somewhat positive note and always end with an action. So what can listeners do? How can listeners help to fight back?
Yeah, following us on social media, which most platforms we are at, we are Scourge, so S-C-R-J. That's a really big way to just kind of get involved and learn more about this, because we try our best to get onto social media of like, what is Scourge doing, and also highlighting what our chapters are doing kind of on their campuses and showing you like, these are really just like young folks that are doing amazing work and putting together kind of amazing events and campaigns on their campuses, and just showing and highlighting kind of how much like just a committed group of individuals can do, and how you can just kind of build from there and see how you can kind of implement it in your own life. But then kind of to focus on Scourge and how you can kind of get involved with Scourge. We're a newly forming nonprofit, and as is kind of the case with all nonprofits, we're always in need of donations. So we have a GoFundMe. So even if it's just sharing the GoFundMe with people that you know or donating a dollar, that's kind of a real big way to get involved and get engaged and support the work that Scourge is doing. If you go to a Catholic university, starting a chapter would be amazing, and just seeing how you can start to slowly change your community and start that conversation on your campus.
Yeah, filling out a chapter inquiry isn't a binding thing. So if you're a student and you're listening and you really just want to learn more and see what you can do tangibly as a student on your campus, like, fill out the chapter inquiry. It's not something that's binding and that you have to create a chapter, but we want to get in touch with you and we want to give you resources. I think one of the biggest things, though, is that if you're an alum or you know anybody that went to a Catholic university or a university that just didn't provide this care in general, speak up to your alma mater. Like, there's nothing that upsets universities more than upset donors and alums that bring a large stream of money into their budget. So speaking up and saying like, hey, like, why don't you provide this healthcare? Look at these amazing students that are filling the gap for you. You should take this on. And if you don't, I won't give you money. And I think that's a really, really powerful stance that alums can take, but also like friends of alums can really like raise awareness about what's going on campus. Like, I know, like, even for other, you know, issues that are going on campus, like, alums are like, oh my God, why didn't I hear about this? Like, why didn't I hear about this? So raising awareness that way as well is really, really important.
For those who aren't at Catholic universities, we do hope to really expand Scourge as it grows to schools of other denominations and even secular schools, because at the end of the day, sexual and reproductive health care statistically is one of the biggest health care needs of the young adult population. And so for any student population, any group of young adults that really doesn't have adequate access to these services, this is something we do really want to work on and intentionally get those people kind of empowered and mobilized to kind of make that change.
Yeah, it just so happens that, you know, our movements have started at Catholic universities, but that does not mean that it's a problem elsewhere. And we really, really, we don't want to continue the spirit of the Catholic Church being exclusionary. So, like, if you do not go to a Catholic school, but you are still being deprived of this healthcare, like, please, please, please reach out to us. We would love and love to be a resource to you. So that's one way you can fight back.
Well, Christina, Lauren, thank you so much for being here and all the hard work you're doing.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure, and I am so grateful that you gave us this opportunity.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on our next episode of Repros Fight Back. And until then, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Repros Fight Back. For more information, including show notes from this episode and previous episodes, please visit our website at reprosfightback.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at reprosfightback. If you like our show, please help others find it by sharing it with your friends and subscribing, rating, and reviewing us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.